Okay, so we finished with the 11 virtuous mental factors, right? So just recap, what are they? The 11 are faith, shame, embarrassment, non-attachment, non-hatred, non-ignorance, effort, or joyous perseverance, pliancy, conscientiousness, equanimity, and non-harmfulness.
Rang Gula Kang Ketup Chegi Lapse Nimbo Timare, Tang Motoche, and it rang Gula Kang Ketup Che, that Tindes Yabina, Yavachu, the Motu Yuina, and around the Kevin Kareem, or Tindes Summer Boys Danche, and it's a Yavachu, Rang Gula Kang Ketup Che, but in the Tindeka with Tone, then Yavachu, the Kanashu and Ashir, Tang Oni Yawains, that Sumbu Yazong, that.
So we need to get a rough idea to introduce ourselves to these 11 virtuous mental factors. Yeah? So we should have a rough idea of what are their respective objects, their respective aspect, and their respective functions. Yeah. So by having a rough understanding of these 11 mental factors by way of these three features, then we try and develop these mental factors in our own mind. So that's the essence, isn't it? Right. So we have to see for ourselves, what is in it for us, what are the benefits that if these 11 mental factors, or virtuous mental factors, what are the benefits for us when they arise in us? Yeah. So it's mentioned in the text that these 11 virtuous mental factors are by nature virtuous, right? by any entity, they are virtues from their own side. So without depending on any kind of motivation,
yeah.
So it is mentioned that the predispositions or the imprints of these virtuous mental factors are also virtuous, right? And the action, the physical and verbal actions motivated by or following from these virtuous mental factors also become virtuous. These 11 virtuous mental factors can only arise in our minds through effort, through putting in the effort to generate them. Yeah. And when these virtuous mental factors arise in our minds, then, you know, subsequent to the rising of these virtuous mental factors, you know, then the imprints of virtues are left on our minds. And when we have virtues, when the imprints of virtues are left on our minds, then, you know, then more likely that we will perform virtuous physical and verbal actions motivated by such mental factors, right? And these positive effects, you know, don't just occur in this life, but they will stay with us, you know, from life to life, yeah. And from life to life, we just have to get, you know, to familiarize ourselves with these over and over again. Yeah. It's quite obvious, isn't it? In order for any of our physical and verbal actions to be virtuous, they have to arise, you know, from imprint of virtue. Yeah. But in order for there to be an imprint of virtue, the first a virtuous mind must arise, yeah, isn't it? So you can see, so we have to put effort into generating virtuous minds. These virtuous minds leave positive imprints, which then, you know, give rise to virtuous physical and verbal actions. Yeah. So by recognizing, by thinking about this process, yeah, then, you know, one should come to, one should get the idea that that is extremely important, yeah, to develop virtuous minds,
yeah.
So the text talks about virtue by way of attainment at birth, yeah. But this is not something that just happens without a reason, yeah. So in order for there to be virtue by way of attainment at birth, there has to be virtue by way of application in the first place. And virtue by way of application basically means, you know, putting in the effort, right? You know, doing something, you know, putting in the effort to develop virtuous minds. So when we put effort into developing virtuous minds, and when virtuous minds arise, so definitely then there is hope, yeah, in the future. Yeah? You know, just, you know, from the moment you are born, you know, you have this, you know, all these virtues, yeah, isn't it? So in essence, we have to know what are these virtuous mental factors, yeah, their respective entities, and to know what is in it for us, you know, when we develop these in our minds, yeah. So following from this, you know, then as it says, as it is said in the engaging in the Bodhisattva deeds, we just have to do it, yeah, you know. We just have to depend on joyous perseverance, yeah, which is essentially an enthusiasm for virtue, yeah.
Hotir shata tine ma kazan ta tsanyan chuk sti jala ta tsanyan ni mo chuk da cha kondo ma jan mariba tilsum dawa ni mo jen sini ta tsanyan ni mo chuk sini tang du tuk sini tang.
Okay, so next are the six root afflictions. So the six are attachment, anger, pride, ignorance, doubt, and afflicted views. Okay, so if you have any questions about the 11 virtuous mental factors, you can raise it up right now. Yeah.
Since the virtue by way of application has this four conditions, relying on a virtuous spiritual guide, listening, I guess the third one will be reflecting, and the fourth one will be meditating. Could we equate that with the second type of joyous perseverance, which is the effort, joyous perseverance of application, which has two, constant and respectful application. The respectful application, can we relate that to relying on the virtuous spiritual guide? And the constant application refer to the listening, reflecting, and meditating on the teachings. So I'm just trying to read. Connect the constant and respectful application to this virtue by way of application, connecting the two to these four conditions.
Give it in the temple, Not sure.
But it would be very nice if the two can be connected to these four like this. The respectful application relating to a virtuous friend, and a constant application referring to the listening, reflecting, and meditating.
Possible, I don't know. Last time I saw one commentary, they explained about this too, yeah, but not. I don't remember that.
Can I say that non-harmfulness, right, is no different from compassion?
Can't say 100% for sure, but it would seem like perhaps, you know, it is saying that it is compassion. Yeah. Well, if you look at the definition of non-harmfulness, right, seems to be saying that, but so the definition of non-harmfulness pretty much the same as the definition of compassion, yeah.
Then that will lead to the other question. So out of the four immeasurable, right, we have equanimity and compassion among the 11 virtues. Then how about joy and love? These two seems to be not mentioned.
So the equanimity that is part of the 11 virtues mental factor is not the immeasurable equanimity. So in general, there are three types of equanimity. Equanimity of application, isn't it? And equanimity of which is feeling and immeasurable equanimity. Of the mental factor of equanimity that is part of the 11 virtues mental factor is basically the equanimity of application. Yeah. So not everything is listed there, but we can see if immeasurable love or love can come under non-hatred.
Mm.
So, and also, you know, whether immeasurable joy can come under non-hatred or not, yeah. So, something to think about, yeah.
Hello, Kanu Broshe. Can I clarify with you? The function of Prayansi, right, is to eliminate all obscuration. And then later part, there's one part of the text, it says that on page 49, right, that this part it says, explain about the different category of virtuous mental factor. Then there's this statement which says, within observation, how to say, virtue by way of ultimacy are explained to be dustness, because all obscuration will be purified if one meditate within observation of dustness. So the function of Prayansi, right, is to eliminate obscuration. So it means that the object of observation is necessary dustness. And you know, it gives me a feeling that why is it that the function of wisdom is not to eliminate all obscuration, but is Prayansi.
You have so many there, so I don't know what question you're asking. You ask what?
Okay, is the...
I also brain dead.
Maybe I'm very confused myself, okay. So
you ask one by one.
Because normally, right, for our basic program, normally we generally...
How does Prayansi overcome obscuration?
Yeah.
Essence, right? Mm.
That's your question.
Yeah. Okay. Because we will... I mean, my idea will be wisdom overcome obscuration. But now, you know, here it says that the function of Prayansi is overcome obscuration.
Already explained already. So remember the obscurations? The obscuration in this context?
Mm-hmm.
The five, yeah.
Okay.
The five obscurations. And
okay. Okay, then can I say that the difference between wisdom and ignorance, right? Is wisdom necessary a conceptual mind? Because wisdom has the... Under wisdom, right, the definition that it differentiates the quality using reasoning. And then non-ignorance, right, is like a knowledge arising from fruition. So when one directly realizes emptiness, the mental factor of wisdom is there inside that continuum. Because if wisdom is a conceptual mind, so non-ignorance is present in the continuum of a mind that directly realizes emptiness. But how about wisdom?
So you're saying that once wisdom is a non-conceptual mind, it cannot discriminate, is it? It cannot analyze. That's
because
your point.
The definition of wisdom, right, is the that differentiate the quality, and then we use the four ways of reasoning. So in this way, it seems to give the impression that wisdom is a conceptual mind. So when one directly realizes emptiness, right?
So can a direct realization of emptiness still perform analysis?
Yeah.
Essence.
Has the mental factor of wisdom manifesting?
Ah.
basically essence is is wisdom, the mental factor of wisdom, necessarily conceptual, right? Because you're going by the reason that it is analysis, right? So wisdom is not necessarily mental factor of wisdom is not necessarily conceptual. There are non-conceptual ones as well. So for example, there's direct perception of emptiness, right?
Equanimity has a function of what do you call that? Not allowing opportunity for affliction to arise. So it seems to then give the impression that then we don't have to realize emptiness, right? Because by merely achieving the level of equanimity, affliction does not arise.
The answer to that is in the text, the last paragraph of the section on equanimity, isn't it? The function of equanimity is specified as not allowing an opportunity for afflictions, because upon attaining the ninth mental abiding, the manifest afflictions of the desire realm are very easily overcome, and in particular laxity and excitement do not arise during meditative equipoise. Yeah. So not allowing an opportunity for afflictions, the afflictions here refers to the manifest afflictions of the desire realm. So when so it's very clear that it refers to the manifest afflictions of the desire realm. So without the wisdom realizing emptiness, it is not possible to abandon the afflictions of the three realms. Especially so therefore, in order to destroy the afflictions of the peak of cyclic existence, the highest possible existence in cyclic existence in samsara, one needs the wisdom realizing emptiness, without which there is no way to destroy the afflictions of the peak of cyclic existence, the highest level in samsara.
어두신 닦아든 전이 죽으시네. 다 지난해 다 니몽 세게 다다다. 자연 니몽 죽으시네. 당보다 니몽도 되시게 하시다고 뭐 군주만에 군했더니 다 초 니몽 세게 전이 가려졌으나 뭐 군했더니 초 강조나 랍도 모시고 전이도 좀 어때서 대중에 생기게 랍도 모시고 쳐봐. 대 니몽 전이 더 실수 못다 강제나 생기 랍도 모시고 모시고.
Okay, so in the section on the six root afflictions, first an explanation of afflictions is given. Yeah. So according to the compendium of knowledge, you know, so the definition of an affliction is a phenomenon such that when it arises, the characteristic of being very unpeaceful arises, and due to its arising, the mental continuum arises as being very unpeaceful. Just as it has been said above, it is an awareness that causes the mental continuum to be very unpeaceful when it arises. So when any mind arises and it causes a disturbance, in the mind, it causes one to be very unpeaceful, then that very mind is called an affliction. Yeah. So there are the six root afflictions and the 20 secondary afflictions. So what is attachment? It is clinging of the three realms. It has the function of producing suffering. Just it has been said above, so attachment is a mental factor that perceives a contaminated thing to be attractive by way of its own entity, and thereupon seeks it. So just as Lama Tsongkhapa said in his Lamrim Chenmo, attachment observes an external or internal object that is beautiful and attractive, and then becomes attached to it. For example, just as oil that has been soaked into a piece of cloth is difficult to remove, likewise, attachment spreads on and adheres to its object of observation, making it difficult to tear oneself away from it. So what is the object of observation of attachment? It is either an external or internal object that is beautiful and attractive. So that is the object, yeah? So what is the aspect of attachment? Aspect is this difficulty of separating from the object. And the function of attachment is it produces daiji, suffering. So attachment is of the three types: attachment of the desire realm, attachment of the form realm, and attachment of the formless realm. When divided into two, yeah, you have attachment of the desire realm and attachment for existence. Yeah, attachment for existence includes detachment of the form and formless realms. Yeah. So these two are counted as one. The function of attachment is specified as producing suffering. For the purpose of making us understand that the root of all suffering within the three realms of cyclic existence is a rebirth which connects to us to cyclic existence. And the principal cause for rebirth within cyclic existence is attachment, craving itself. Even though one has accumulated the projecting karma for a rebirth in cyclic existence, just having the karma alone doesn't necessarily mean you will experience the result of that karma, a rebirth in cyclic existence. What nourishes that projecting karma is attachment and craving. Attachment and craving nourishes the imprint of that karma and gives it power such that it can then throw us into a rebirth in samsara. Yeah. So attachment nourishes the projecting karma that has been accumulated. It gives it strength, power, such that you know then it then actualizes. Yeah, rebirth in cyclic existence. Yeah, isn't it? So it is attachment, which then is said to be the principal cause for rebirth in cyclic existence. So due to attachment, then the karma is nourished. We are reborn in cyclic existence, and from rebirth in cyclic existence means suffering.
Yeah. Right?
Next is anger. What is it? It is a malice towards sentient beings, suffering, and phenomena that are sources of suffering. It has the function of acting as a support for not abiding in contact and for misconduct. Just as it has been said above, anger is a malice that upon observing the three objects of observation of anger, cannot tolerate them and wishes to harm them. So the three objects of observation of anger are one are sentient beings, one's own suffering, and the sources or from which these sufferings arise. In order to get upset, to get angry, there must be an object, yeah. Something that, you know, that anger is focused on, yeah. So these are the three objects, yeah. What is the shape of this anger? What is the aspect that we say? What is anger? What is its aspect? It is malice. So malice is essentially a mind that, you know, it's very gross, you know, very mind, very rough mind, and this hard mind that wishes to harm, you know. So anger functions as a support for not abiding in contact. Yeah. What does it mean? For not coming into contact with happiness, basically. So according to the precious garland, there are these nine bases of malice. Yeah. Harmful intent arises from nine causes of intending to harm others, bearing senseless misgivings in the three times with regard to oneself, one's friends, and one's enemies. So with regard to oneself, so one applies one regard to oneself, also to the three times, past, present, and future. I was harmed. I'm being harmed. Or I will be hurt. I will be harmed. So these are the three. So anger arises because of these reasons, isn't it? Yeah. You think, oh, I was harmed, so then we get upset. Oh, I'm being harmed, so I get upset. So I will be harmed. Oh, he's going to hurt me. Or he will hurt me. Then we get upset. Then the same thing with our, it says one's friends, basically people who we consider to be on our side, you know. Oh, they were harmed. They are being harmed. Or they will be harmed. So again, one gets upset and one gets angry because of these three reasons, yeah. Then with regard to one's enemies, the people who are not on our side, then in relation to them, we think, oh, they were benefited. So we got upset. We get upset. Oh, they were benefited. Oh, someone is helping them now. They're being benefited. They're being helped. Oh, we get upset. Or we think that, oh, in the future, they will benefit. You know? They will be helped. Then we also get upset. So these are So these are the nine causes of malice. Yeah. So with regard to oneself, one's friends, and one's enemies, then with regard to these three, you know, one looks at them in terms of the past, present, and future. Yeah. So, as it is said in the Lamrim Chemu, anger is malice, a harsh mind that observes sentient beings suffering and the sources of suffering, such as weapons and thorns, and intends to harm those objects. So anger is the function of causing one not to abide in happiness in this lifetime, and then produces immeasurable suffering in future lives. So even when when we are feeling happy and generally quite steady, peaceful, but the moment anger arises, the peace degenerates, And also when we get mighty upset, very upset, very angry, then we forget everything, every good thing that the person has done for us, the benefit that we receive from that person, let's say. So anger makes us a lot of enemies. And even our loved ones, the people who have helped us, you know, also, they also become enemies as a result of anger.
Yeah.
So anger basically functions to increase the number of enemies that we have. So even in you know, usually, you know, even if you are able to, you know, sleep, when you are able to sleep well, yeah. But you know, when we are upset, you know, very upset, and then find it difficult to fall asleep, yeah. And also when we are when we are angry, it will also hurt our reputation,
yeah.
So because of anger, even in this life, you know, we basically are not happy. Yeah, not happy. We don't have a good life, not a happy life. And of course, then without saying, you know, then anger has effects on us in our future lives, yeah, where we have to experience a lot of suffering. So just as the engaging in the Bodhisattva deeds says, if one maintains a painful mind of hatred, mind does not experience peace nor obtain joy and happiness, sleep does not come, and there's no stability. So basically with anger, we cannot experience physical nor mental happiness.
Yeah.
So he saddens his friends, he gathers them with generosity but is not served. In brief, a joy does not exist in one where anger abides comfortably. So yeah, even with anger, we destroy our relationships, friendships. So to summarize, you know, the effects of anger in brief, yeah, joy does not exist in one where anger abides comfortably. So the garland of birth stories, Jataka Teo says, due to the fire of anger, one colors unflatteringly. Even adorned with ornaments, one does not look good. Even though one may lie on a comfortable bed, one's mind suffers due to the agony of anger. Forgetful of the benefits one has enjoyed, tormented by anger, one proceeds on a bad path, one's reputations and achievements degenerate like the waning moon. One's glory fades. Although supported by friends, and due to anger, one plummets senselessly into the abyss. One's contemplation of benefit and harm degenerates. One becomes erratic and confused. Due to anger, one becomes habituated to misdeeds and will experience suffering for hundreds of years in the bad migrations. Even an enemy who goes to great length to inflict a great harm cannot manage more than this. So as the Jataka tale says here, when you look at a person who is generally regarded as attractive and pleasant, yeah, and even if the person is has a lot of makeup and jewelry adornments or whatever, you know, but when the person is mighty upset, you know, when you look at the person, I don't think you find the person attractive. Yeah. And by, you know, by not controlling our anger, by just getting upset over and over again, you know, then we get very used to anger. Then what it does is it creates a cause for us to be born in the lower realms, you know, and to stay there for a very, very long time. Yeah. So this is something that an external enemy cannot do to us. So the essence and the advice, the essential advice is to see the anger as a fault, as a problem, and then we just try, you know, to manage it and reduce it. So yes, we just have to see for ourselves, like, you know, look in our minds, you know, when anger is there, it's manifest, do we feel happy or not, peaceful or not? You know? We should analyze the thing about the faults of anger. What is its function? What does it do to us? Yeah. So then by thinking about these, you know, by thinking about these, then when we start to get upset or angry, then we have to remind ourselves, yeah, of what we have reflected on, and then just try to manage it. Yeah. Next is pride. So according to the compendium of knowledge, pride is a puffing up of the mind in dependence on the view of the transitory collection. It is the function of acting as a support for disrespect and suffering. Just as it has been said above, it is a mental factor that has the aspect of a puffing up of the mind upon observing the basis for puffing up. One's own wealth. Yeah, sounds weird, puffing up. A penguin, and then puffing up. One's own wealth, qualities, and so forth. Kingba. Puffing up. I think inflating, maybe.
What does she start on that? Carsona, does she not start on dining? Tell it, that Carsona, my dear Kiera, that Mipala, Chitan, Moro, Yana, Yunde, or Tindela, Roa, kind of one, and Mipa, Chatu, Roa, Mipa, Tindesha, that number is same, Kimber number, Chen says.
So the objects of pride can be, you know, or basis for, as it says in the text, one's own wealth, one's possessions, or one's qualities. And the aspect is an inflating, the mind getting inflated. So yes, the aspect of the puffing up of the mind, or the inflating of the mind. Yeah. Isn't it? Yeah. So the mind taking on the aspect of very feeling very superior, very high up. So yes, the function of acting is a support for disrespect and disrespecting others, and support for suffering in the future lives. So all the disrespect we show, for others, basically comes from pride, yeah. And following from this comes all the different negative actions, yeah. So we either get inflated, you know, our mind gets inflated, and we feel that we're superior, thinking that we're very high, by, you know, focusing on our wealth or our qualities, yeah. So the Lamrim Chenmo says that pride is based on the view of the transitory collection and is a puffing up of the mind upon observing an external or internal phenomenon that is high or low, good or bad. It involves an aspect of loftiness. So independence on the view of the transitory collection is specified because all pride is generated independence on the innate conception which things I. Pride is of seven types. So pride is of seven types. The seven are pride, exceeding pride, pride beyond pride, pride of thinking I, pride of vanity, pride of slight inferiority, and wrongful pride.
Yeah, so many pride.
Okay, the first one. Pride is a puffing up of the mind, thinking that one is superior to lower persons. Exceeding pride is, the second one is a puffing up of the mind, thinking that one is superior to peers. Pride beyond pride is a puffing up of the mind, thinking that one is greatly superior even to other superior persons. Mm. pride of thinking I is a puffing up of the mind, thinking I within observing the appropriated aggregates. Pride of vanity is the puffing up of the mind, thinking that one has attained what has not been attained. Next, pride of slight inferiority is a puffing of the mind, thinking that one is just slightly lower than others who are actually greatly superior. Wrongful pride is a puffing up of the mind, thinking that one has attained excellent qualities when one has actually gone astray. For example, one may feel very proud of you feel very proud because you bash up someone, really tekan and giving a hard time, I really did well, man.
Oh, something like that. Huh?
So in the precious garland, the seven types of pride are also mentioned. But in the precious garland, the description of the first two pride, which is pride and the second one, exceeding pride, these two are explained slightly differently. Regarding these, being considered that one is lower than the lowly, or equal with the equal, or greater than or equal to the lowly is called the pride of selfhood. So the first one is in the precious garden is the pride of thinking I.
Tambo di Shibadiro. 마젤 탐보디 딸기 샤르 마젤 탐보디 거기 뚜뚜 뚜뚜 마젤 탐보디
왜 탐보디 나겨로
어디시 땅 마젤 저도 마젤 탐보다 집발 어린 시장 생 마젤 탐보디 들을 아
So rather I should say this is this first paragraph is a description of the first type of pride, yeah, which is just pride.
What did they
say? Men being angel.
Did they say? That is the thing. Men being angel. That is the thing. Men being
angel. Men being angel.
Men being angel. Men being angel. Men being angel. Men being angel. Men being angel. Men being angel. Men being angel. Men being angel.
Okay, so the first paragraph goes with the first one, pride, yeah. Then the second one is the exceeding pride. Being conceited that one is equal to those who by some quality are superior to oneself is exceeding pride. Being conceited that one is superior to the superior, thinking that one is higher than the very high, is pride beyond pride. Number three. So like sores on an abscess, it is exceedingly virulent. Then next one. Conceiving through obscuration and eye in the five empty aggregates, which are called the appropriated, is explained to be the pride of thinking I. Thinking that one has attained fruits not yet attained is the pride of vanity. Praising oneself for committing negative actions is known by the wise as wrongful pride. Deriding oneself, saying I'm useless, is called the pride of loneliness. So in the precious garden, the pride of loneliness is the pride of loneliness refers to putting down oneself, isn't it? Oh, I'm this, I'm that, I'm stupid, I'm useless, and blah 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 blah. So it is considered to be a kind of pride. Yeah. So we have to think about this. How is it pride? So pride has the aspect of inflating and the mind being inflated, puffing up the mind, right? So, if putting down oneself, thinking that I'm useless, I'm stupid, I'm this and that, if that is considered to be a pride of loneliness, then how does this kind of pride, how does it have the aspect of the puffing out of the mind?
That's what I'm saying. 달래는 지적하는 방법 순위 보거나 멤버래 답 멤버인 셋이 맞을 진짜 또 뜨나 숨나 멤버래 답 멤버이 멤버다 멤버인 셋 멤버래 답하 셋이 모두 한.
So according to the precious garland, yeah, if you look at the first verse, yeah. So pride, the first kind, is considered to be, you know, it refers to, for example, being conceited that one is lower than the lowly. I'm lower than the lowest. No? Or I'm equal with the equal. Or I'm greater than the lowly, or I'm equal to the lowly. So how does feeling one is lower than the lowly becomes a pride? Yeah, I think so, definitely. You feel proud. I'm lower than you.
I think possible. Can you tell me? Possible. Can you tell me?
Any possible to generate pride, Debo?
I think so.
How? Remember the dark means. Remember the dark means.
Sure. Sure. Yuri.
Majele.
Oh.
This was.
You feel good, yeah? Some people feel good, yeah?
How? So is that how is it possible that, you know, it is pride to think that one is lower than the lowly? You know, you get some kind of satisfaction, isn't it? You feel good, right? Hey, I'm lower than the lowly. Well, you know, you feel them. Yeah, you feel proud. Right? Funny, I think it's possible. I'm talking about experience, isn't it? Everything you can be, yeah, you can be. Yeah, I think so. Funny, I think so. False humility, yeah. Maybe.
If that is a proud, then it's not the practice of bodhisattva. You have to consider thinking that I'm lower than the Lord, isn't it?
No, no, different. That's different.
Yeah.
Different. Different feeling. Yeah.
If that is pride, then when you feel lower than Lord, you are more humble. You feel comfortable. That the practice of bodhisattva is in. How can we be proud?
No.
Huh? Reasonable, humble.
Hallucinate what? False humility, lah.
Maybe reasonable, humble, and unreasonable, humble. Huh? I don't know.
Pride has the function of obscuring, so it talks about the function, yeah. it functions to obscure any new attainment of the Dharma or scriptural and realizational Dharma. Due to its disrespect for those who possess excellent qualities, causes rebirth in the bad migrations in future lives, and even when reborn as a human, acts as the cause for rebirth in the low caste, as a servant and the like. Therefore, it produces undesirable in both this and future lives. So, according to the precious garland, through being inflated, one comes a bad lineage, through jealousy, little magnificence, and so forth. Then, according to the Lamrim Chenmo, since pride is the greatest hindrance in developing the path in this life, and it's the cause for becoming a servant and the like in future lives, abandon it.
Oh,
So there are these seven types of pride, yeah. So you just have to, you know, get to understand what they are, the seven are, and also the function of pride. Yeah. So in short, in this life, it obstructs the generation of qualities, and in future lives, causes a lowly rebirth. Yeah. So by thinking of the faults of our pride, then we just try to reduce it there in this life. Next, ignorance. So ignorance is an unknowing of the three realms. It is the function of acting as a support for the arising of wrong ascertainment, doubt, and afflictions with respect to phenomena. Yes, it has been said above, ignorance is a mental factor of unknowing that is obscured. Regarding the mode of abiding of all phenomena, it is of two types, an obscuration that is the mental factor of unknowing, and an awareness that apprehends erroneously. From among these two, the explicit indication in the compendium of knowledge explains ignorance to be the mental factor of unknowing. Since Aracharya Vasubandhu also explained it in this way in his discussion of the five aggregates, the assertions of both Asanga and his brother agree. However, Acharya Dhammakirti asserts ignorance to be an awareness that apprehends erroneously. In this way, although there are two types of assertions with regard to ignorance, one, the assertion that is a wrong conception, and number two, the assertion that is an awareness that does not realize, both are alike in asserting that the principal antidote to ignorance is the wisdom realizing selflessness. So the ignorance is of two types. It either refers to a mind that apprehends erroneously, or to a mind that, or simply to a mind that doesn't know. So the lower and higher Abhidhamma both agree that ignorance refers to the mind that doesn't know, right? And which is this mind which doesn't know is ignorance, and ignorance is the opposite of knowledge. So here in this context, ignorance is posited to be not knowing. Ignorance is of two types. Ignorance that is obscuration with respect to actions and their results. ignorance, that is obscuration with respect to the meaning of suchness. The ignorance that is obscuration with respect to actions and their results causes one to accumulate actions for rebirth in the lower realms. The ignorance that is obscuration with respect to the meaning of suchness causes one to accumulate actions for circling in the good migrations. Its function is specified as acting as a support for the arising of wrong ascertainment, doubt, and afflictions with respect to phenomena, because other afflictions arise in dependence on ignorance. In dependence on them, the actions arise. In dependence on actions, all sufferings of cyclic existence arise. Therefore, all afflictions and faults arise in dependence on ignorance. So in brief, this ignorance is the root of circling in the three realms of cyclic existence, since it's the basis for all actions and afflictions. Ignorance is taught at the beginning of the 12 links of dependent arising. Just as it has also, what is doubt? This is being too pointed with regard to the truths. It has the function of acting as a support for not engaging in the class of virtue. Just as it has been said above, it is a mental factor that wavers between two points within observation of the four truths, cause and effect, and so forth. This doubt hinders all virtuous activities and especially hinders the seeing of the truth. Since it will be overcome when one sees the truth, it is said to be a thorough entanglement that is an object of abandonment of the path of seeing. Next slide. So here, doubt is the afflicted doubt. Yeah. So afflicted doubt here is abandoned by the path of seeing. Yeah. So it is an object of abandonment of the path of seeing. Unlike, for example, anger. What else do you have? Anger, the ignorance, the afflicted. Views and so forth, those are not abandoned by the path of seeing, yeah. But afflicted doubt is abandoned by the path of seeing. So when we have doubts, regarding karma and their results, when we have doubts regarding the Four Noble Truths, then we will not abandon that which we need to abandon, and we will not we will not cast aside those things that need to be cast aside, and we will not adopt those things that need to be adopted, and therefore it hinders virtue, right?
Mm.
So we will look at the afflicted views in the next lesson. Okay, so if you have questions regarding the five root afflictions that we have just covered.
What are the objects for doubt and ignorance?
So the object of observation for doubt here, this doubt, an afflicted doubt, I guess you can posit them to be the Four Noble Truths and the presentation of karma and their effects. And I guess for ignorance, the object of observation can be all phenomena.
Can we say then that regard to this pride of loneliness, lowliness, lowliness and the pride of selfhood, to explain it, how the aspect of it being inflated or puffed up has got to do with, this is just a postulation, that has got to do with within observing the eye, which is the view of a transitory collection, wishes to cherish this eye, wishes it to be happy. So it inflates in that way, so that you know, when you think, oh, I'm lower than the lowly, so I'm actually seeking attention to myself. And comparing that to the bodhisattva who cherishes others and thinking, I'm lower than the lowly because I am cherishing others, observing others, then there's a big difference between the two. So the point is just to postulate and guess whether this could be the case for all, but specifically also for these two, a pride of selfhood and pride of loneliness. The aspect, the subjective aspect is within observing the eye, which is from the view of a transit collection, cherishes this eye greatly.
Can you appreciate about the ignorance, right? It says here that I'm not too sure what it means by unknowing of the three realms. So if it means unknowing of all phenomena, then if it's just mere unknowing, then I don't know, I'm not too sure how the wisdom realizing selflessness will make us know all the three realms.
What the second part was?
Because the principal antidote to ignorance is wisdom realizing selflessness.
Nyimbo this one. Nyimbo.
Nyimbo.
Yeah. So, and if ignorance is posited as just mere unknowing of the three realms, so how does realizing selflessness, which is for Sutra school, is self-substantially assistant self, make one realize three realms? Make one realize all phenomena.
Like if I do not know this is a microphone, I have the wisdom realizing selflessness. How does it help me overcome the ignorance that this is that I do not know that this is a microphone?
Yeah, something.
For
and
example,
it's all phenomena,
all phenomena, right?
Yeah.
There's always an answer to everything, basically. It is the principal antidote. Yeah. The principal antidote. So the final, ultimate antidote is the wisdom realizing selflessness. Yeah. Of course, the mind not knowing that this is a microphone is basically opposed by the mind that knows that you just learn that this is a microphone. But of course, then there is a mind that doesn't know the final mode of abiding of the microphone. Yeah. So then the antidote to that is the wisdom realizing selflessness. Yeah.
Okay, we stop here. Yeah.
Sunday, 睡觉.
When? Sunday, have? I didn't think about. Huh? What's the last discussion question? Remember? Last one? Last one, the last Sunday, the last one. Last question. What's the last question from the last Sunday class? Remember the 51 mental factors?
What are the respective objects, aspect, and function? Wow, win already. Win already. Win already. What is the difference between the main mind and the mental factor, and what are the five? How do you say that? What are the five? How explain the concomitance of the five similarities between the main mind and the mental factor, and its mental factor. What is the difference between a main mind and a mental factor? Explain the concomitance of the by way of the five types of similarities. Yeah, of concomitance by way of the five similarities. Yeah. So, what is the difference between discrimination and attention? Then same question following from that. Is discrimination necessarily conceptual? Is there a difference between aspiration and belief? What is the difference between wisdom and non-ignorance? Is there a common locus between faith and aspiration? So some of the questions may be difficult, yeah. The point here is, you know, there are times when you may not be able to find a conclusion. But that's not the point of the discussion. The point of the discussion is an opportunity to go into the text and read it. And the whole idea is to get a clearer idea. You know, to have a clearer idea of what is being discussed. Yeah. That's all, yeah. Okay, I'll finish with the usual prayers. So,